I just remind you of one of the things that I was talking about last time. We were talking about derived schemes, and the typical example of a derived scheme was spec A, where A is an E-infinity ring spectrum. So let me remind you what that is. So if A is an E-infinity ring, spec A as a topological space was spec pi naught A. That is the set of prime ideals that are contained in pi naught A. And this has the usual Zariski topology. It has a basis of open subsets, U sub F, being the set of prime ideals that do not contain a given element F. And the structure sheaf, O spec A, well, it's determined by its sections on the U sub F. And here I said we want to take A adjoint F inverse. And A adjoint F inverse can be defined by a universal property. So I stated that universal property last time. Let me state it this time in a slightly simpler form. So A adjoint F inverse, let's regard this not just as an arbitrary E-infinity ring, but as an A-algebra, as an E-infinity ring that has a map from A. And in the world of A-algebras, it's characterized by the following universal property. Homs of A-algebras from A adjoint F inverse into any other A-algebra B, well, this is empty if F is not invertible in B. And it's contractible otherwise. So remember that in the world of E-infinity ring spectra, or E-infinity algebras over a given A, instead of having mapping sets, we have mapping spaces. And I told you that today I would talk about how we could understand how to turn this definition here. Well, this is a... I've told you what O spec A is supposed to do on a given one of these basic open subsets. And it's supposed to be something which has a universal property, but this is not a universal property quite in the sense of usual category theory. It's a universal property in a sort of higher categorical sense, because I haven't pinned down the mapping spaces exactly. I've only pinned down their homotopy types. But nevertheless, working in a sort of higher categorical framework, this should be enough to pin this down and show that it's functorial in U sub F. But what I'd like to do today is describe a formalism, a convenient formalism for actually carrying that out. Okay, so the moral is that the kinds of objects that we're going to need to work with to do derived algebraic geometry, things like E-infinity ring spectra, are objects that behave in a homotopy theoretic way. And in order to really work with them, we need a language which, a convenient language which takes that into account. Okay, so what I'd like to do today is to talk about a language for higher category theory or homotopy theory. So first, let me just draw a little distinction here. So in abstract homotopy theory, you often encounter things that are, you know, simplicial categories or topological categories. That is, you have objects, and between the objects, you have mapping spaces. And this is really a special case of higher category theory, or theory of n categories, where, say, in an n category, you have a bunch of objects, and between any two objects, you have an n minus 1 category of maps. So you could imagine that homotopy theory, you're encountering the special case where those n minus 1 categories are actually n minus 1 groupoids. They are all of the morphisms higher than the 1 morphisms are invertible. So when I say higher category theory, I'm always going to be talking about these kinds of higher categories. That is, higher cat with no non-invertible n morphisms for n greater than 1. And I'll just informally call such a thing an infinity category. Okay, so so informally, an infinity category, we have some objects, and between any two objects, we have some maps, and those maps themselves are organized into an infinity category, but an infinity category in which all the morphisms are invertible. And sort of basic, maybe should say thesis of higher category theory is that when you're talking about higher categories in which all of the morphisms are invertible, you're really talking about homotopy types. So an infinity category, one way of formalizing this, so possible formalisms. So one suggestion is to work with topological categories. That is, categories which are enriched over topological spaces, just ordinary categories in which all of the morphism spaces have a topology and composition is continuous. So this is a perfectly good formalism, and you could actually work with this. That is, you could construct a suitable category of E infinity ring spectra as a topological category and try and phrase everything in this language, but for many purposes it's very inconvenient to work with this, to work in this framework. So we'll see later on in this lecture that in other frameworks it becomes much easier to, for example, construct this sort of an object. So let me just mention a few other formalisms. So maybe the most popular and most traditional formalism for talking about objects that behave in a homotopy theoretic way is Quillen's theory of model categories. So I won't say any words about this if you're not familiar with it, but let me just mention that this is really only suitable when you have lots of homotopy limits and colimits. And it won't be suitable for us, for example, if we want to talk about derived schemes. So derived schemes, like ordinary schemes, don't have arbitrary colimits. You can't take an arbitrary diagram in schemes and hope to make a colimit for that in the category of schemes. So there are more sophisticated formalisms, which let me just mention a few. There's the theory of Siegel categories. Complete Siegel spaces. Theory of quasi-categories. And others. And all of these are really just an attempt to capture this idea of an infinity category, or an infinity category in which all of the morphisms above one are invertible. So what I'd like to do today is talk about my favorite, which is this theory of quasi-categories. So I understand that a few months ago there was a whole course on the theory of quasi-categories given by Andre. I'll just sort of, well, since probably a lot of you weren't here, go over some of these ideas again. Okay, so let me try and motivate the definition of a quasi-category. Let me start by thinking about topological categories. So, first, let me consider two types of infinity categories. There are two basic examples that we want to incorporate into any theory of infinity categories. So, example number one, any ordinary category. Any ordinary category should qualify as an infinity category in which the mapping spaces are just discrete sets. And example number two is any homotopy type. As I mentioned earlier, any homotopy type, that is something that you should be able to regard as an infinity groupoid. That is, if you have, say, X is a topological space, you think of it as encoding a groupoid where the objects are the points of X, the morphisms are paths between points of X, the two morphisms are homotopies between paths, the three morphisms are homotopies between homotopies, and so on. So these are two examples that we want to incorporate into any theory of infinity categories. And now, so we want something that sort of has to do with ordinary category theory and has something to do with topological spaces simultaneously. And this theory of topological categories, well, that's sort of a brute force way of accomplishing this. If you take the theory of topological spaces and the theory of categories and you mush them together. But the theory of quasi-categories arises when you try and look for some sort of mathematical object which already has something to do with ordinary category theory and already has something to do with classical homotopy theory. So, namely, mathematical object is simplicial set. So simplicial sets are mathematical objects that can both encode ordinary categories and encode ordinary homotopy theory. So first let me just take a survey. Should I give a definition of simplicial set, or is everybody here happy? Everybody here is happy. Okay. All right, so let me just remind you, well, simplicial sets, maybe the origins of the theory of simplicial sets are in homotopy theory. So if X is a topological space, then you can use it to construct a simplicial set Sing X, where the n simplices are continuous maps from a topological n simplex into X. So this, it turns out, remembers all of the homotopy theory of the topological space X. That is, from this singular complex of X, you can reconstruct maybe not X itself, but at least a topological space which is weakly homotopy equivalent to X. So this thing is not an arbitrary simplicial set. This is what's called a Kahn complex. Let me just remind you that that means that a simplicial set S is a Kahn complex if any diagram like so be filled. So here, this is the n simplex as a simplicial set. This is the I horn in that n simplex where I emit the I face and the interior. So what this translates to is the fact that any map from the topological I horn into S can be extended to a map from the n simplex into S, and that's just because the I horn is a retract of the n simplex. So the singular complex of any topological space has this property. And conversely, any simplicial set that has this property is really something that you can work with as if it comes from a topological space. That is, there are easy combinatorial recipes for extracting things like homotopy groups in the context of Kahn complexes. So you can use these kinds of simplicial sets as a model for homotopy theory. Okay, so that's what simplicial sets have to do with classical homotopy theory. Converse, on the other hand, simplicial sets can also be used to encode categories. So let C be a category. You can associate to that a simplicial set called the nerve of C. This is going to be a simplicial set where the n simplices are going to be in bijection with diagrams, just chains of length, chains of n arrows. In this category C. And now, of course, I need to tell you not only what the simplices are in this simplicial set, but also what the face and degeneracy maps are. Well, the face and degeneracy maps are just given by omitting terms in this sequence, by composing the arrows, and duplicating terms in this sequence by inserting identities. So, on observation, the nerve of C remembers the category C. That is, from the nerve, you can recover the category not just up to equivalence, but actually up to isomorphism. The objects in the category, those are just precisely the zero simplices in the nerve. The morphisms in the category, those are precisely the one simplices in the nerve. And how do you compose morphisms? Well, if you have two morphisms, say a morphism from X to Y and a morphism from Y to Z, well, that determines for you sort of part of a two simplex that you might find in the nerve. So what you should try and do is complete that to an actual two simplex. In this situation, there's going to be a unique two simplex such that the first edge coincides with F and the second edge coincides with G. And then the long edge is going to give you the composition G composed with F. Now, of course, this won't always work. If you started with an arbitrary simplicial set, you probably wouldn't be able to extract a category from it in this way. But it's not hard to characterize exactly when this process does give you a category. Namely, simplicial set X is the nerve, or I should say isomorphic to the nerve of a essentially unique category if and only if, well, it satisfies a certain lifting condition analogous to this. What is that condition? Well, again, it says that if we have a map from a horn into X, then we can extend it to a map from a simplex into X. But in the case of a category, of the nerve of a category, this extension is unique. But it only exists if this is a so-called inner horn, that is, strictly between 0 and n. So the origin of this restriction is easy to understand. If we're in the nerve of a category, we expect to be able to, if we have, say, f and g, we expect to be able to extend this to a two-simplex because we can compose f and g. But on the other hand, if we had one of sort of outer horns obtained from a two-simplex by emitting the first or the last arrow, then we would see sort of a diagram like this in some category. And we would be trying to factor H through the map F. That is, trying to find a dotted arrow which makes this diagram commute. And that's typically not something that we would expect to be able to do unless F was invertible. Okay, so simplicial sets can behave like topological spaces when they're concomplexes, and they can behave like ordinary categories when they satisfy an analogous lifting condition. This lifting condition is stronger in the sense that we get a unique lifting, but it's weaker in the sense that it only applies to inner horns rather than to all horns. Definition. A simplicial set X is a quasi-category or other terminology. The original terminology for this, I think, was weak concomplex. And the terminology I prefer is infinity category. If it satisfies a lifting condition, which you get in some sense by intersecting these two lifting conditions. That is, for all 0 less than I less than n, n maps from an I horn into X, there exists an extension of F naught to a map F from an N simplex into X. So this is weaker than the notion of a concomplex because we only apply requiring the lifting to exist for inner horns, and it's weaker than the notion of an ordinary category because we're not requiring this extension to be unique. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. So now I motivated this definition by sort of taking two other definitions and observing that they were kind of similar and then sort of intersecting them. So from that point of view, it might be sort of surprising that this is actually turns out to be a very good idea and a very good lead to a very robust version of higher category theory. So let me just indicate how you should think about one of these quasi-categories when you have one. So from now on, instead of calling simplicial sets X, when they're quasi-categories, I'm going to denote them by letters like C, because I'm really going to think of them as if they are ordinary categories, or analogous to ordinary categories. So let C be a quasi-category. So some terminology. An object of C is a vertex. That is, an element X in the set of zero simplices, or in other words, a map from the zero simplex into C. A morphism, say F, is a one simplex. Say F in the set of one simplices or a map from delta 1 into C. And now the source and target of F are the faces. Or the restriction of this map to the two zero simplices that you can embed into the one simplex. So if I were to give you three objects, x, y, and z, and a morphism from x to y, a morphism from g to z, this is the same thing as giving a map from a certain horn into the category C. And now this filler condition applies because that's an inner horn. So what this filler condition would tell you in the most basic case, where I is equal to 1 and n is equal to 0, is that any time I see this picture in my quasi-category, I can extend it to a 2-simplex. And now what's that telling me? Well, it provides some other morphism, H, from x to z. And this 2-simplex should be thought of as a homotopy which relates the composition G composed with F with H. Now, in contrast with the case of an ordinary category, H is not uniquely determined. So you probably shouldn't say H is the composition of G and F. Better to say, perhaps, that H is a composition of G and F, or that this 2-simplex exhibits H as a composition of G and F. So you get H, but I'll just informally say that H is the composition of G and F for right now. Okay, so this notion of composition is not going to be associative on the nose, because it's not even well defined on the nose. There could be many choices for this 2-simplex and therefore many choices for F. But in order to, say, extract a sense in which this composition is well defined, well, I would like to say that this is a formalism for higher category theory in the sense that I first explained, that is, we have some objects, and between any two objects, we have some kind of a space of maps. So let me now try and sort of extract some of those mapping spaces for you. So let's see, again, be a quasi-category. And let x and y be objects of C. I'm going to define a space of maps from x to y. This is going to be a simplicial set. So when I say space, I'm going to mean space in the sense of simplicial set approach to homotopy theory. It's a simplicial set, so I'll tell you what its n simplices are. So its n simplices are going to be the set of n plus 1 simplices in C, such that the first vertex of sigma is x, and the opposite face is degenerate at y. So let me see what this means in some simple cases. So the zero simplices in maps from x to y, these are just the edges that have source x and target y. The one simplices in maps from x to y, well, these are going to be triangles. The first term is going to be x. The other two vertices of this triangle are going to be copies of y, and this edge is going to be required to be degenerate. Or I should have mentioned degenerate edges. We might as well call degenerate edge, say, at a single vertex y, it's an edge that joins y to itself, and that's what in this context plays the role of the identity. So one simplex here is a picture like this, and I told you before that you should think of a 2-simplex here as giving me a homotopy between the composition of these two arrows with this arrow. So in this case, one of these arrows is an identity. You should think of this as a homotopy between F and G in some sort of, or in other words, a path or a one simplex in some sort of mapping space. And I won't spell this out any higher, but you can sort of imagine how this goes. So, in fact, if C is a quasi-category, then these maps, fact I think is due to Andre, then this is a Kahn complex. And now I can state a sense in which this composition is unique. Well, if I give you F and G, and I look for an H, which I can put into this diagram, H is not going to be uniquely determined, but what I can say is that any two choices for H lie in the same connected component of this Kahn complex of maps. Well, in this case, from the Kahn complex of maps from X to Z. So it's not uniquely determined, but it's uniquely determined up to homotopy. And in fact, you can make stronger statements than that, but I'll only make that statement for now. Okay, so far this has been about, well, I want to tell you three things in this lecture. First thing is what quasi-categories are. That's what I've given you so far. Next thing I'd like to talk about is where they come from, how do you obtain one, and the final thing that I want to talk about is how you can work with them, and in particular to use them to solve the problem that I began this discussion with. So, where do we get quasi-categories? Well, one easy answer is as nerves of ordinary categories. We designed this definition so that it was a weakening of the condition that we had over here, which guaranteed that a simplicial set was the nerve of a category. So any ordinary category we can think of as a special kind of simplicial set, and in particular as a quasi-category. Answer number two, well, as singular complexes of topological spaces, or more generally, any Kahn complex can be regarded as a quasi-category, and those are we should think of as quasi-categories in which all of the morphisms are invertible. But maybe, but more generally, if C is a topological category, we can extract topological nerve, which I'll use the same notation that I used for the nerve of an ordinary category, but it's not going to mean the simplicial set that I would get by ignoring the topologies on the morphism spaces of C. So I'll define this in a second, but what I want to say is I mentioned topological categories as a formalism that we could use for doing the kind of higher category theory that we need to do. What I'm going to give you now is a construction which translates from that formalism, which tends to be a little clunky, to this formalism of quasi-categories, which for many purposes is easier to work with. Okay. So let me describe the topological nerve. An And in fact, I won't spell out the entire definition. I'll just tell you what the simplices look like in low dimensions, and then I'll write a dot, dot, dot. So let C be a topological category. Then the nerve of C, this is going to be a simplicial set. So the vertices, this is going to be the set of objects in C. So far, just like the ordinary nerve. The one simplices, these are just going to be the morphisms of C. Again, so far, just like the ordinary nerve. The two simplices are going to be, that's where we're actually going to start using the topological structure on the morphisms in the category C. So remember that a two simplex, we can draw something kind of like this. We have the boundary of the two simplex should supply for us, well, first, three vertices, which we'll call X, Y, and Z. We can think of those as objects of C. Then the edges should give us a morphism from X to Y, a morphism from Y to Z, and a morphism from X to Z. Now, if this was an ordinary category, we would then, to have a two simplex, we would just require a condition, namely the condition that H was equal to the composite of G and F. But in this formalism of quasi-categories, you should really think of a two simplex as encoding a homotopy that relates the composition of G and F with H. And now we'll actually make that our definition. A two simplex in the nerve of C is going to be this data plus a homotopy, or plus a path from the composition of G and F to H in the mapping space Homs from X to Z. So that's some topological space. We can talk about a path ending at one point, or beginning at one point and ending at another. Actually, let me switch these two. A path from H to G circ F. Okay. What about the three simplices? So a three simplex of nerve of C first, if I restrict that three simplex to the boundary, I should get a bunch of data. Namely, first of all, the three simplex has four vertices. So we should get four objects, W, X, Y, and Z, in the category C. Now, a three simplex has six edges, so we should get six morphisms, which I will draw in a diagram. So we have W, X, Y, and Z, and then we have some morphisms, F, W, X, F, X, Y, F, Y, Z, F, W, Y, F, X, Z, and F, W, Z. So that's the data that we would get from the edges. So third, we should get some data from the faces. There are four faces of a three simplex, and they should give us four paths. So those four paths will join, say, F, we have a path from F, W, Y to F, X, Y composed with F, W, X. This is a path in the space of maps from W to Y. Similarly, we have a path from F, X, Z to F, Y, Z composed with F, X, Y. We have a path from F, W, Z to FYZ composed F WY and FWZ to F XZ composed with FWX. So this is the data that we get just from the boundary of that three simplex. And now let's try and look at what that data gives us inside the space of maps from W to Z. So inside the mapping space, HOMS from W to Z, well, we can, using this data that we've written down up here, we can write down 4 points of that space. Namely, there's a point where, which is FWZ. So that's where we go directly from W to Z using the map F. Or we can stop along the way from W to Z at the point X. So then we get FZ, FXZ composed with FWX. Or we can stop at the point Y. And then we get FYZ composed with FWY. Or we can stop at both the points X and Y. And we get FYZ composed with FXY composed with FWX. So we have 4 points in this mapping space. And we also have a bunch of paths. Namely, these two paths here give us a path from this point to this point and a path from this point to this point. And those first two paths, well, those are paths not in the space of maps from W to Z, but in other mapping spaces, but they induce... Ah, sorry, I wrote that wrong. The last two paths correspond to paths that join these points. And now, that first path here, that's a path from FYZ to this composition. And if I just compose that path with FWX, have I done something that should be, well, that first path is a path from something on the board to something else on the board. What have I done? Well, these first two paths give you paths that join this point and this point, and this point and this point. So what we see is actually a copy of the boundary of a square inside the space of maps from W to Z. And now the additional data that we're going to need to have a three simplex rather than the boundary of a three simplex is an extension to the interior of the square. This is going to be data number 4. So we're going to have a map from this entire square into HOM WZ, and the four corners of the square will give the four compositions that I've written here, and so forth. Okay, so I've spelled this construction out explicitly in the case of 0, 1, 2, and 3 simplices, and now I'm going to write a dot, 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 so you can sort of imagine what will happen for a 4 simplex. In this case, we'd have to think about 5 objects, and we'd have to think about various paths between them. The boundary of the 5 simplex would give us various paths in mapping spaces. It would give us various squares mapping into mapping spaces. And the analogous picture that we would see here would be, well, in the space of maps from the first object to the fifth object, we would have the boundary of a cube. And the additional data supplied by a 4 simplex would be an extension of that to a map from the interior of the cube into the appropriate mapping space. So rather than go into detail, I'll just write dot, dot, dot. You can try and write it down more precisely on your own time. All right, so now theorem, or maybe it shouldn't be called a theorem. It's not a very difficult thing to check, but if C is a topological category, then the nerve of C is a quasi-category. And so this provides a very rich source of examples of quasi-categories. You can start with topological categories like the category of say CW complexes with mapping spaces given by the compact open topologies, and then you can take the topological nerve in this sense and extract a sort of simplicial set model for that same homotopy theory. So let me just mention a variant. If C is a simplicial category, there is an analogous construction instead of using topological cubes here. I would use cubes in the category of simplicial sets, and the nerve of C is a quasi-category if the mapping spaces in C are concomplexes. And now the typical way that you would apply this variant, so let A be a simplicial model category, something like simplicial sets, or your favorite model for the category of E-infinity ring spectra. So A is a simplicial category, but typically A is not the kind of simplicial category that we want to apply this nerve construction to. The mapping spaces are not concomplexes. But inside of A, we have a subcategory consisting of vibrant cofibrant objects. And in a simplicial model category, if you consider the space of maps from a cofibrant object to a fibrant object, that's always a concomplex. So this subcategory does have concomplexes mapping spaces. And you can extract the nerve of this category of fibrant cofibrant objects. And you can think of this as the sort of underlying quasi-category of A. So here, this construction takes a model category, sort of extracts, in some sense, the underlying homotopy theory, and discards your understanding of that homotopy theory as coming from an ordinary category with fibrations and cofibrations.
I'm forgetting,
the I don't know that that's true. Maybe Andre knows.
What's the question?
I think it's not in general. Okay. So the upshot of this discussion is that there are many examples of quasi-categories and various sort of homotopy theoretic objects that we might be interested in, like E-infinity ring spectra. They can be realized as quasi-categories. So if you were, say, a homotopy theorist and you liked model categories, then you might like to, say, build some model category in which you thought of the objects as E-infinity ring spectra. Well, then you can pass from that world to this world by doing this construction, and you have a quasi-category that you could call the quasi-category of E-infinity ring spectra. So alternatively, you could sort of work in this framework from the beginning and make a more direct definition of the quasi-category of E-infinity ring spectra. But I don't want to talk about that today. But what I would like to do is get back to the point of applying this formalism of quasi-categories to, say, construct diagrams in E-infinity ring spectra. So let me give a definition. So let C be a quasi-category. object X in C is initial if for every map F naught from the boundary of an N simplex into C such that F naught carries the first vertex to X, there exists a map F from the N simplex into C extending F naught. So let me spell this out for some simplices of low dimension to get a feel for it. And I guess I should mention here, N should be greater than 0, otherwise this condition does not make sense. So let's spell this out. What does it mean for X to be an initial object? Well, the simplest case in which this makes sense is the case N equals 1. So in the case N equals 1, a map from the boundary of the N simplex into C, well, that's just, the boundary of the N simplex is just 2 points. So what we're saying is if we have 2 points, and the first of them is required to be X, so we have two objects, X and Y, then we can extend this to a map from the 1 simplex into C. That says, for any Y, there's a map from X to Y. Okay, that sounds like it's starting to justify its terminology of being an initial object. An initial object should map to everything. But in ordinary category theory, an initial object should map to anything by a unique map. So let's see how that's encoded in this case, N equals 2. So what's that saying? Well, suppose we have a map from the boundary of the 2 simplex in. So what's that data? That's the data of 3 objects and 3 maps in a diagram like this. And, of course, we have the condition that the first of those be X. So let's go. So now, suppose we have any diagram like this. The requirement is that this can be filled in to a 2-simplex. In other words, there's a homotopy between the composition F, circ, H, and G. And this makes sense. If we were requiring X to be an initial object, there should, in some sense, only be one map from X to Z. So if G is a map from X to Z, and the composition here is a map from X to Z, they should be the same, or they should be homotopic in this context. And conversely, this implies that there's only one map from X to Z up to homotopy. For example, we could take the following diagram. If we had two maps, G and G prime, from X to Z, well, we could construct a map from the boundary of the 2 simplex where we use G and G prime and, say, the identity map from Z to itself. And now if we required that this filled in to a 2-simplex, well, that 2-simplex is precisely providing a path that joins G and G prime in this mapping space that I defined up here. So this implies that sort of X is an initial object up to homotopy in some sense. If this was an ordinary category, we would already have pinned down X being an initial object. In this case, we've pinned down X being an initial object in the homotopy category. But for more sophisticated purposes, knowing this is not enough, we need higher versions of this condition where N is larger than 2. And that expresses that, in some sense, these homotopies that we're using to relate maps out of X are themselves unique up to homotopy. So now let me give a reformulation here. X in C is initial theorem x and c is initial if and only if, for all y, this space of maps from x to y is contractible. And this direction should be an exercise, and this direction should be a little bit more work. Okay. So now I'd like to come back to the original problem. So now I'd like C. So let's fix an E infinity ring spectrum. And I'd like C to be the quasi-category of A algebra, that is E infinity ring spectra with a map from A. So there are various ways that you could construct such a beast. One is, for example, to take some model category of A algebras and then to discard the objects that are not fibrant, cofibrant, and take the NURF, as I indicated earlier. But let's just assume that we have this C. And now what I'd like to do, let's suppose that F is in pi naught A. So now what is A adjoint F inverse going to be? Well, first, this is going to be precisely an initial object in, why don't I call this C adjoint F inverse? So C adjoint F inverse, this is going to be the simplicial subset spanned by A algebras C such that simplicial subset of C such that F is invertible in pi naught of B. So I just take my category, quasi-category of all A algebras. Some vertices in that quasi-category correspond to A algebras in which F becomes invertible. And I discard all the other vertices and keep only those simplices such that all of the vertices satisfy that condition of F being invertible. So C adjoint F inverse is supposed to be such a quasi-category. And now, what is A adjoint F inverse? Well, before I told you, A adjoint F inverse should have a universal property. First of all, F should be invertible there. And second of all, if I consider maps from this to anything else where A is invertible, that should be contractible. And the fact that F is invertible implies that if I consider maps to an A algebra where F is not invertible, it's automatically empty. Because if there were any maps from this into another A algebra B, that forces F to be invertible in B. So that, according to this, that's precisely the condition that A adjoint F inverse belong to this category and be an initial object in this quasi-category. Okay. So now, goal, construct a presheaf with values in C, so let's call this presheaf F, such that F, evaluated on this open set U sub F, is A adjoint F inverse, or is an A algebra that has this universal property. So, more precisely, what am I going to mean by a presheaf? Well, let P denote the partially ordered set of subsets of spec A of the form U sub F. So I only want to consider these basic open sets of the type that I was talking about. And now, P is a partially ordered set, so I can think of it as a category where the morphisms are just inclusions of open sets. So a pre-sheaf is supposed to be a functor out from the opposite category into C. Or at least that's what it would be if C was an ordinary category. So in this context, pre-sheaf is going to be, by definition, a map of simplicial sets from the nerve of the opposite category into C. So let's call this F. All right, so next, let's try and build F step by step. So what I mean by step is I'm just going to consider building this simplicial set simplex by simplex, and at each simplex I'm going to try and define F in such a way that F is compatible with what I've already done on the boundary of that simplex. So start with vertices. We need to define the vertices in this simplicial set are just the open subsets of spec A of the form U sub F. So on these, we know what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to define this to be an initial object of C adjoint F inverse. That is something which has the universal property that we wanted this pre-sheaf, that was going to define this pre-sheaf. So of course, in order to carry out this step, we need to know something about E infinity ring specter. We need to know that there is something which has the appropriate universal property. But that's a separate issue from the question I wanted to talk about today. So let's assume that we know how to define this on all vertices so that it has the appropriate universal property. Well, now, on n simplices, for n greater than 0, what do we get? Well, so an n simplex here corresponds to a chain of inclusions of n plus 1 open subsets of the form U sub F. And now, on the boundary, so what we will already have say F restricted to the boundary of delta N as a map from the boundary of delta N into the quasi-category of A algebras, and what we're trying to do is extend that to a map from the N simplex into the quasi-category of A algebras. And now the observation is this actually factors through what I've called C adjoint F0 inverse. Because the fact that all of these open subsets are included in F0, well, that's telling me, essentially by definition, that whenever F0 is invertible in an A algebra, these F1 through Fn's are also... No, sorry, have I said that wrong? Have I said that backwards? That's backwards. Whenever Fn is invertible, all of these F0 through Fn minus 1 are invertible. So this actually factors through what have I done? No, sorry. Yeah, that's right. If F1 is invertible, then we're in this open set. So we're in this open set, so F0 is invertible. Right, I said it right the first time. So this actually lands in this simplicial subset, C adjoint F0 inverse. And now, by construction, I demanded that F carry this first vertex here to an initial object in this category C adjoin F0 inverse. So by the definition of an initial object, there exists an arrow which makes this diagram commute. So that precisely lets me extend this to an arbitrary n simplex. And then I just proceed simplex by simplex to get this map well defined on the nose. To construct this map. Now, of course, there's not going to be a unique map with these properties, but a more sophisticated argument along the same lines will tell you that actually the space of all pre-sheaves which have this property is a form of, well, the collection of all pre-sheaves with this property is parametrized by some sort of simplicial set. The same sort of argument will show that that simplicial set is a contractible Kahn complex. So this is, in some sense, unique. It's unique in the strongest sense, which is reasonable in this context. All right, so that is all I wanted to say for today. I'm sorry I went over time. Yes. I can if you like.
So why do pre-sheaves of keys don't have homotopy? And another thing is related to some examples. So in that case where you have the curve and you, so would the global sections of, so let's just take A2, so C is equal to C prime, so these were the curves where you're intersecting. And so this, let's just find them by y equals 0. So would the homotopy groups of the global sections of the intersection be, so be basically just, so this is it.
C brackets x in pi naught, c brackets x in pi 1, just zero elsewhere. Yeah.
And so, but I'm slightly confused. So, what if it's not a field of characteristics zero? Would that be?
It would be the same. Well, so there's it depends on whether you're using simplicial commutative rings or E-infinity ring spectra.
Right.
If you use E-infinity ring spectra, then it would be more complicated.
Okay.
Positive characteristic.
Okay.
But it depends on what you mean by setting y equals 0. Like, does that mean tensoring with the ordinary guy, or does it mean...
But in any infinity, but I guess wouldn't it be like h?
If that's what you mean, then it looks like this.
Right, that's what I thought. But and if it still looks like this, if you put like a field of characteristics,
provided that this is what you mean. I mean, there's another thing that you might mean, which is sort of attaching a cell to kill y, attaching two cells to kill y inside this.
I mean left derived.
They're still different. Like, this guy is not the guy that you get by attaching one cell to kill y in E-infinity ring spectra if you're in positive characteristic. Because this guy is not, y is not sort of like, this is not a free E-infinity ring spectra on x and y in positive characteristic.
Okay. And I guess a related question would be, so I'm slightly confused, I guess, about these simplicial commutative rings.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they equivalent to? differential infinity, differential graded algebra? No.
No.
So, what is, so it's just...
They're not, they're not equivalent to E infinity ring spectra or in positive characteristic. They're different from commutative differential graded algebras and E infinity ring spectra.
And E infinity, so, okay. So they're different from both?
Yes.
Okay. But in characteristic zero, they're...
Characteristic zero, they're all equivalent modulo connectivity hypotheses.
Okay. And is there a place for it where this is...
So you want to know that things are...
The relation between Max and Bishop and the rings and differential graded algebras and
machines. I'm sure that there is. There's an informal discussion in my thesis, but written down with details, I'm not sure where to direct you.
Also, to this thing about this example, where so I think I understand if like what you so if you had this ring, what was it? And you killed you had R and you killed Y. You said Y. So you're I guess I was thinking of simply short commutative ring, and I'm not sure if that's what I should have been doing. But that was sort of computing the homotopy co-equalizer of this, right?